coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Welcome to Worth Doing Badly, Lutheran Radio UK's weekly review of the readings for the upcoming Sunday. My name is Ethan Stoppenhagen, and today we'll be looking at the readings for the second Sunday after Pentecost, Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 to 15, Psalm 81, verses 1 to 10, 2 Corinthians 4, 5 to 12, and the Gospel reading, Mark 2, 23 through 3, verse 6. And this is a lesson we'll begin with, and I turn it over to David Weber.
Obviously, front and center is the term Sabbath in this passage, and I'm actually using the longer reading, 23 to 28, because it gives us two incidences in which Jesus utilized the arguments over the Sabbath in order to distinguish and define the meaning of his presence, which in the broader sense, I think, is the gospel that God is really present among us and that changes our lives in every possible way. Particularly, what's important here is that Sabbath actually means rest. And I think Jesus's argument, his rejection of the Pharisees is a rejection of restlessness in all of its form. And I think it's ironic that the religious appointed guardians of the Sabbath were also the advocates of a kind of managerial restlessness that turned the Sabbath, which was an expression of God's love, into a demanding law that could never, ever be satisfied. So for me, I hope that the sermon will, when it's all said and done, will actually connect the gospel's promise as being a liberation from the restlessness I think that is utterly consuming our culture. And maybe it's always been a consuming force in life. And I think Jesus' two rejections of the Pharisees' argument against him help define why their view of the Sabbath was just lifeless and why Jesus' view of the Sabbath was that it is a gift given to man, that it was specifically designed for us, for human beings, to give us life. And this is what puzzles me, Ethan, maybe not in your experience, but in mine. Almost always the preaching on this passage stakes what I will say is an untrue claim that the gospel frees the Christian from keeping the Sabbath. And as that is translated, it means that Christians hear that and say that attending church on Sunday or worship is no longer obligatory. And that's just true enough to make it really insidious. Because the whole passage here is not aimed at rejecting the Sabbath. It's aimed at redefining it and reclaiming it as an aspect and as an expression of God's love rather than as an obligation to be kept. And I just think it's something which is wrong to make the gospel the reason why Christians are free not to be in God's real presence. That people hear the gospel as a reason why I don't need the benefits of word and sacrament, which is nonsense on stilts. And yet I hear it over and over again. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I agree that there's this, we view the gospel as this ticket to freedom, and it's a freedom from doing anything in the life of faith, and particularly freedom. It's freeing us from the duties and obligations we have as citizens of God's kingdom. I recall that there's an Anglican collect that concludes to serve the Lord whose service is perfect freedom. And I think that gets lost in how we understand the duties of serving Christ, because in any way we serve him, he's just it to serve him is I don't want to say easy, but it's life-giving.
Yeah, okay, you've articulated it in a way that to me it the best expression of what you just said is when I hear artists talking about their art and they refer to it as their work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right. Not work as an obligation. It's work as a consuming passion and a source of joy and creativity. So I don't know how but I would like by the time, you know, the sermon is done that we begin to start thinking of Sabbath less as a work to be done, but as actually this location where God's creative energies and work are being unleashed in our lives. And that might be a tall order because the way that God works is very slow and subtle and beneath the surface. So at any rate, I think the key is to remind people and ourselves that Sabbath means rest, right? And that the Sabbath is a crowning event in the act of creation. It's the seventh day that is not separated from creation. It is the culmination. Everything that happened in the 6 days finally culminates in nothing happening. And that is the quintessential experience of creation when we simply enjoy it. And so I think that the people who say we are free from the Sabbath are categorically wrong, because they will recognize that the Sabbath is important as part of the creation week. They don't recognize it as essential to God's recreation and restoration and salvation in our lives. The Sabbath was made for man, not for the managers. And the managers, I think, are the Pharisees here who help us understand how someone can take a gift and turn it into a liability. Someone who can take the gift of rest and turn it into a restless pursuit of a nonsensical obedience to rules. And so, and again, I'll just go back and say, I think Jesus is again tying us that the Sabbath is part of the rhythm of creation, and now it's a part of the rhythm of his salvation. And that rhythm is depicted in this text as satisfying hunger and our need for healing. Now, there's probably more metaphors, but hunger and healing are central to understanding the rest Christ offers in the Sabbath. And it sees hunger and healing as impetuses in our life that are forms of restlessness. We know what it means to be hungry. We can't stop thinking only of satisfying that. And of course, healing may be even more profound of a restlessness when we recognize that our deep desire, if somehow we have been injured or somehow we are ill, our deep desire for healing, and that's what's promised in the Sabbath. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, and that was actually going to be one of my questions for you, that there is, you know, what I think our normal understanding of rest is just a cessation of activity. But what I think this passage shows us, as you pointed out, is that there's this idea of satisfaction and completion that comes with rest, that everything, it's not just that the work is done, it's that it is finished in a sense. And I don't know if you'd be able to say a little bit more about that idea of completion and how it connects to rest.
Yeah, it's going to come as in terms of a confession. This has been a hard text for me because I have been and resort to my Pharisee self over and over again, especially if I'm worried about how the church is doing and how, you know, a worship is lacking attendance. It's so easy to just be restless, thinking that the problem is my problem, or the problem is the congregation problem. And it's just, it's kind of makes you lightheaded that you can turn you know, people who are having a perfectly, you know, enjoyable and restful life, if you can ruin their life by demands that make them more and more restless. So, so I'm confessing here that I am quite naturally tilted toward being a manager and a Pharisee, because I don't like all of the uncertainty that makes me restless in life. Jesus is making it very clear. There are real things that really make us restless, but in some way his presence frees us from that. And again, as I said, the metaphor is like the metaphors are hunger and healing. And so I'm very keen to say, how can I have this promise of rest more and more a part of my experience of God's presence day in and day out? And the key is not to turn God's work of love into lifeless works of law and obligation. And this is what I really like about a Lutheran upbringing. It has made us keenly aware of the language of law and obligation. It sometimes goes overboard, but I think that's a sensitivity to language that's worth cultivating. All right, so what does it mean then that the Sabbath gives us a rest from our restlessness? It gives us a life in a world of lifelessness. And especially I'd like to get your opinion is how this promise of Sabbath becomes translated into the work of or into worship, our Sunday worship, because rest, Sabbath means rest. It doesn't mean worship. And yet, you know, in the development of language, it has come to mean worship. So at any rate, I think this text is dealing with our restlessness that we have because we're mortal, that death scares us, that that we have to either blanket out or distract ourselves, or we will be fixated on the fact that there is no escape from our mortality, except that Jesus here is offering an escape in terms of a promise that where he is, he communicates to us, he gives us his gift, which is the promise of eternal life, which in this life offers, we experience in this rest. And what I like most about it, it offers me a chance to rid myself of this desire for control. And it does it by making me see how ridiculous the desire for control looked on the part of the Pharisees. I'm very happy that Jesus was foursquare in opposition and made it quite clear that their Sabbath was not his view of the Sabbath. And on this issue, they were at odds with each other. So how do you do that? I think that Jesus is connecting the rest with the history of slavery, especially in the Old Testament. Israel's exodus is considered a kind of enjoyment of the Sabbath. You are no longer defined as slaves. And a slave is defined by his work. What makes you a man is that you work. And the moment that you stop working, you have become useless. Yourself is useless. So Jesus flips the script on the Sabbath. It is not an obligation. It is slaves are defined by their obligation. It is a sign of our freedom from the slavery, that the Sabbath is the rest that defines a person not as a slave. And what I really like about this, Ethan, is it rescues work from being an obligatory form of slavery. Now, I think people are wrong when they say the Sabbath means that we are not defined by our work. I think that's wrong. It means that we are not only defined by our work. Could we ever say of the creation week that God was not defined by the work that he did because he rested on the seventh day? Now, obviously, the seventh day makes the work of God into something different than it would be if it would have just been restless creation. So I think this is one of the beauty of Luther's insight on vocation, is that work is not, in fact, merely obligatory or slavish. It is where we, as individuals, are co-participants, co-creators with God. The work of creation continues on in our labors. And so the Old Testament makes it very clear that work is good, but its goodness is so good, we will be tempted to think it is the highest good. But it's not. The highest good is that we work, gains momentum, and comes to rest. We don't rest in order to make us better workers. We work in order to enjoy the benefits of this rest, and the benefits are remarkable. Now, if you read back in Genesis, you get to Genesis 4, and there's a poem by a fellow by the name of Lamech, who is celebrating his tyrannical autonomy from God, and he does it with a poem that celebrates his works as extolling his own virtue. So there's the contrast. And again, what I really like about this passage is that it promised to save me from the slavery of this restless slavery of thinking that my identity is defined by what I get done, by what I accomplish. And, you know, being almost 70, this is the time when people used to give themselves the license to bore young people with all of the great things that they had done in their life, which were totally untrue. But when you don't have any memory, you can become any person that you want to. I think this frees us from having to extol all the great things that we think that we have done. And the other thing I like about this is it defines slavery as those who never rest. And Christ just simply does not want slaves. He wants children. And the sign of that is that we can rest, and that this rest is, as you had mentioned earlier, it's not doing nothing. This rest is where we are restored and we are fed when we are healed. And so I think that the point of all this is expressed in the psalm, where it talks about that on this day of the Sabbath, it happens to also be in the Psalms a day of worship. And what I find remarkable in the psalm is all of the instructions given to a huge orchestra of poets and musicians. Now, this is an undeveloped thought, Ethan, but the fact is that the Sabbath, which only means rest, presumes that it creates a community that is defined by its music and its words and its poetry. And as I said, the instruments of this ensemble is these instruments are remarkable for the diversity, and so the psalm presumes that what we experience as a promise of the gospel will be experienced concretely as the body of Christ turns out to be a symphony of different instruments playing together. And it made me appreciate my upbringing of, from the time that I was small, people at the church were trying to get me to participate in the choir. I was a trumpet player. I was always playing for this or that service, and I wasn't altogether happy about it. But I didn't realize, as a teenager and in high school, that where the Sabbath rest works, it is an explosion of creativity. And what do you think of that? Is there anything there?
I had never considered that about the rest of the Sabbath being sort of that communal activity. I think we think about it usually as me finding restoration, but that there's this, that the work, if you will, of the Sabbath is the response of the praise of the worshiping community. That, you know, with voices being joined together. I love that idea of the symphony, the many voices coming together as one. I think there's something there that's worth exploring a little bit more.
And I like what the way the Psalms, with not only the Exodus, but also from the exile, The Psalms always say, what would you do if you actually were liberated from exile or from, you know, in the Exodus? Mm-hmm. You would want music. You would want singing. You would want praise, right? So there's never a command, you know, to do these things. It just happens naturally for those who have been relieved from slavery and become free. They become creative as God is creative. And that creativity in the church happens to be music and poetry and rhetoric. And the widespread dissemination of books and knowledge, to me, is one of the explosions. Here's what happens when people have time to think, right? Well, they think. And when they think, they write. And if they have the kind of time that Christ promises, they think and speak and write with remarkable ability. And this is what I think is so remarkable, that the church pays somebody to weekly come forth and try to, as best as possible, to offer some rhetorical encouragement and understanding. I just find the sermon, as hard as it is to do good on a regular basis, it's still remarkable that we have been given the freedom to try to be good, to try to put forth a work of artistic expression that will encourage, that will heal, that will feed, whatever the metaphor we have. And of course, we've talked about this. This is what makes it so frustrating, because we can see the possibilities. We ourselves just find it more difficult to achieve those lofty goals. So can you tell me why sermonizing seems to be reduced to a restless obligation, when in its best form it is a remarkable opportunity for the pastor?
I wonder if it gets weighted down in the expectation. I think there's this expectation that we have to wow and impress and give something memorable, and that becomes the focus.
Okay.
Instead of offering the life-giving word, which in itself should wow and impress and be memorable.
All right, that's nice, that this rest is the ground in which growth takes place. Now, again, just briefly on the psalm, even though I've mentioned, I really like, sing aloud, shout for joy, raise a song. You don't do that out of obligation, right? This is an invitation. And you got the tambourine, you've got the sweet lyre. Now, tambourine players aren't very talented, but a lyre must be difficult, or a harp, or the trumpet, right? The percussion, and they're all there going to work together. Now, I have found that musicians aren't exactly the most amiable people, and they're hard to work together, but for some reason, it is the overarching draw of the music that turns those stubborn players into people who are cooperative. What a picture of the church, right? Taking us our stubbornness and simply drawing us up into this music of the gospel, and letting that overtake us. And again, celebrating in the psalm the whole point of Egypt. This is what I like about preaching, is that we have to continually make Egypt a real event in people's lives, this historical event, because Egypt is also this metaphor of the restlessness, the obligatory restlessness and freedom from it. The whole image of the taskmaster. We call them bureaucrats or managers, but taskmaster is so much truer to what they do. We'll give you a task and you hop to it. We're the managers, and this is why Jesus's confrontation of the Pharisees, and most interesting, Jesus exposed them because he pushed the Pharisees to make common cause with the Herodians, who they hated. The Herodians were accommodationists. They were the ones who went along in order to get along. The Pharisee thought that they were unprincipled, they were pragmatic, and Jesus, in his love, wanted them to see the truth about themselves. They were also pragmatic. They, too, were governed by results, and that was in opposition to the gospel. And so, you know, as I've already mentioned, the Deuteronomy passage just makes it so clear how rest doesn't reject work. Rest elevates work. It turns work into an act of participation with God's creation and recreation, and the fact that it is universal. It covering every living being, ox and donkey, sojourners, sons, daughters, male, female. There, it's quite clear that it's so insidious to reject the Sabbath as such. It's rejecting a gift of rest, to not make it clear that there are distortions of the Sabbath, but the Sabbath as such is God's gift, and it's commanded. And again, I'm thankful that you have reminded us that command is connected with telos, the entele. The command is not the end. It points us to an end, and that is this receiving life again as God's gift, which is filled with rest and rejoicing. Which brings us finally to 2 Corinthians, which is such a beautiful passage. But if I look at 2 Corinthians as elaborating on what Sabbath means, this becomes so powerful that Paul's metaphors are explosive. It is the Sabbath offers a light that breaks forth into darkness. And it is a light that is unimpressive because it first does its work deep buried within the heart of human beings. So the question of the effectiveness, hate to use that word, but the consequence, the benefits of the Sabbath will only be able to be articulated by the single heart who has been enlightened. So in other words, again, this seems to put a lot of obligation on preaching, but the effect of that is if our proclamation of the promise actually works as light in people's hearts. And that's a long process. It's hidden. There's not a direct line between cause and effect most of the time. But, I mean, we could just go on that. And what Paul then says is light is knowing. And that single connection explains all of the reasons why the church has been interested in maintaining education, language training, all the stuff that are connected with knowing. That knowing is an aspect of rest. People who are given the rest want to use that opportunity to know. And as we've said, the work of Joseph Pieper has made that so utterly clear that people who are not defined by work are then free to know. And what I like about Paul saying is that this is what true glory is. This knowledge of the glory of God, that Christ's glory is the cross, which is unglorious. Right? So already, if the Sabbath is promising the glory of the cross, it is going to be a complex and ambiguous goodness that's given to us. We ourselves are being shown by this light why Christ's cross is really so glorious that we are not only attracted to it, but we are desirous to participate in this act of love, which is the cross. And Paul says, don't worry about the fact that you can't report this on a bureaucratic form or that you can't stand up and brag in front of people. It is a real treasure hidden in common cookware. We are all common cookware, but what has been given to us is a real treasure. And if it's real, it will do its work whether we're aware of it or not. So give up the restlessness and just come to rest in this promise that is weekly delivered to us in the activity of the Sabbath, which we define as worship.
Thank you, David and Ethan, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app. Download it for free from Google Play or the App Store. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other program on our schedule, send me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. I am your host, Jamie Krieger, and I will be back next week with David and Ethan. Thank you again for listening, and stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.